And good evening and welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host for the next hour, Ken Johnston, and I'll be joined in a moment by our guest today, Mr. Paul McCusker. I want to start out by just praising and thanking God for all of our listeners out there and to thank you for your continued support of us here at In His Sign, that it's been your financial and really your prayerful support that has kept us on the air now for over 40 years, and we just ask you to continue to support us in any way you can as we continue to move forward into the next 40 years. So today I'm joined by Paul McCusker. He's the Peabody Award-winning writer and director of the audio drama Bonhoeffer, The Cost of Freedom, along with multiple award-winning audio dramatizations of The Chronicles of Narnia, The Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis at War, the classics A Christmas Carol, Oliver Twist and Les Miserables, and original works like The Father Gilbert Mysteries and The Luke Reports. Mr. McCusker is also a writer and director for the long-running children's program Adventures in Odyssey, writing not only over 300 audio episodes, but scripting two of the animated video series and 18 spin-off novels, along with serving as an author and consulting editor on the Imagination Station series. His plays and musicals have been performed in community theaters across the country, including the Dove Award nominee A Time for Christmas. And Paul now serves as director of content creation for the Augustine Institute. He lives in Colorado Springs with his wife, son, and daughter. So welcome, Paul. It's my pleasure to welcome you to What the World Needs Now.
Oh, thank you, Ken. Good to be with you.
And we only had a few seconds before we came on the air, but last week I was given the copy of The Trials of St. Patrick. And as soon as I saw the packaging, I recognized it because I had to travel to Dayton, Ohio, and back a couple times via car in the month of March. And being a secular Franciscan, I had come across Brother Francis, the Barefoot Saint of Assisi, which was an audio drama, which was absolutely fabulous and no better way to pass the time. So when I saw the series about St. Patrick, I became even more excited and at the opportunity to talk to you about it. So one of the things I like about these audio dramas, a guy like me, I think I burn away an awful lot of brain cells in the past, so a lot of times when I'm reading, I don't comprehend everything. But the audio drama and this way of presenting it, it really sticks with you and is well done.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So what prompted you to do the Trials of St. Patrick?
Well, when I went to work with the Augustine Institute, it's been 2.5 years now, I think. One of the things we had started immediately with was a discussion about doing audio dramas or how to tell stories in fresh new ways. And audio drama is a big part of my background, as you mentioned, from my time at Focus on the Family and elsewhere. And then, of course, once we decided, we'll do audio dramas, then it was a question of, what audio dramas to do? And Dr. Tim Gray, who's head of the Augustine Institute, had said, I think we need to start with St. Francis, and let's start with some well-known saints and tell their stories, because I think a lot of people know the names, and they have a vague knowledge of the saints, but not necessarily the details of their lives. And I'll be honest, I was actually reticent to want to do that, because I feel like a lot of times the saints are, they're kind of like those perfect big brothers that your parents are always holding up to you and making you feel bad because you're not more like them. And I thought, I'll take a look. And if there's a solid story there, then by all means, we should tell it. And so it's beginning with St. Francis. It made perfect sense. There was a great story to be told. And then, of course, the next step was St. Patrick. And St. Patrick's story is very powerful and dynamic, as you probably heard. And so really, that's a big part of it, is how do we tell stories that will engage listeners, and how do we tell stories that will engage Catholics in particular, that might quicken their faith, stories that's going to invigorate them and what they believe and why they believe it.
So one of the things that I like about the audio drama is it's actually like listening to a play. And I've had other series of CDs on St. Francis of Assisi and other ones, and it's more like being in a classroom. Maybe you could explain to our audience what's actually involved in making this audio drama and how you bring it to life.
Well, it starts with basically the story, I mean, the subject and the story of the subject. I mean, in the case of St. Patrick, what I had to do first was dig into what we know of his life and try to construct from that a story that we hope will be compelling and enjoyable to listen to, something that will engage everyone. And so I went through a lot of material to study his life, to kind of figure out what we know, what we don't know. Fortunately, we have two documents by him, two letters that he wrote, and part of those letters actually chronicle parts of his life. So that helped me a lot. And then as a dramatist, where the scholars can't really agree on certain things, and that just gives me an excuse to do what I think is best. So when I do all of that, then that's leads to the script, and then the script gets refined. And we actually record with actors over in London for a variety of reasons. And a big part of it is that actors in England, still many of them know the discipline of how to act with just their voices. It's a completely different discipline than you'll find with being on camera, that sort of thing. And so we record over there with some great people. John Rhys Davies was involved in this. People know him from Indiana Jones, from a lot of different movies and TV shows, and he played the older Patrick.
Sure.
So we record them, and that's really all we recorded, just their voices. And then we bring all those recordings back and begin what is essentially our post-production, where we begin to integrate sound effects and custom music and kind of fashion and create the world in which the characters live, so that it'll come alive for the listener. It's kind of like cinema for the mind, really. It's not old-fashioned radio. It really is more dynamic in terms of what we pour into the sound effects and the music. So all of that combines to the final thing that people listen to of the audio drama, whether they're in their car or listening over a headset or at the gym or wherever they might be.
Right. And for myself, I have a full-time job that I work besides doing a couple shows here each week. And my commute back and forth to work is about 35 minutes. So I knew with St. Francis that they were about each one was about a half hour long, just a little bit longer. And this series with St. Patrick looks to be almost identical. This one's it's an 8-part series and runs anywhere from looks like 20 minutes to about 24 or 27 minutes. So
yeah.
If you have a regular commute to work, this is something that's ideal to pop into your CD player as you're making the commute. It's summertime, so at least people here in the Philadelphia area are making a 2-hour trip to the shore and back. So in 4 hours, you can probably listen to all 8 parts here. And and it's like I said, I listened to St. Francis in a 9-hour drive from Philadelphia here to Dayton, Ohio, and the time just passes. And like you said, when I first put it in, I didn't know what to expect. And the stuff that's in the background, whether it's just voices or the music, was just awesome. And you feel like you're listening to a movie. And the actors are well done, and really appreciated the work that went into this. How long does it actually take you to put something like this together?
Well, from start to finish, I was trying to think. When we decided last year to do the story of St. Patrick and then decided we wanted to have it out in time for St. Patrick's Day, then we had to get into the studio to record the actors by August. And allowing then the week or two that it took to record the actors and then that whole post-production thing that I explained earlier. Yeah. I think we had it done in time for just around March 1st.
Okay.
So, so we're talking 5-6 months. Now, the guys that I work with, a bunch of them also have full-time jobs. They're doing what they do for me and for the Augustine Institute part-time. They have other jobs. And then they kind of squeeze this out as they can on the side. I think we could cut the time substantially if everybody was full-time working with us. But since they're not, it's fine. I mean, we're getting these things turned around in anywhere from 5 to 6 months, which is pretty good considering the level of quality and the intensity of the production. We're about to go into the studio again to record a new drama, and we're recording. We're really pushing this one harder. We're recording it in July, and we actually hope to have it out by mid-November, which may be about the same time frame. But this one's a bit more intensive, so it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds.
Can we ask you what this one's about?
Yeah, actually, it's the story of Saint Cecilia.
Okay.
And not a lot of people know Cecilia or know her story. And when it was suggested to me by Dr. Tim Gray that we ought to consider that, I really, apart from being like the patron saint of music, I really didn't know anything about her story. Mm. And of course, as I dug into it, a bigger story emerged for me, not only her life and what happened to her in her specific life, but what happened to her after she died. And what became of her by way of her influence and by a lot of different things that happened hundreds of years after she died. And our drama is going to deal with all of that.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it involves the music side of things. I don't think it gives too much away to say that, for example, Handel, the composer, appears in the drama, and the poet John Dryden, and others. So it's different from Francis and Patrick.
Very good. We'll have to keep an eye out when it comes out and have you back on to talk about Cecilia.
Yeah, I'd love happens. To. Her feast day is November 22nd. That's why we're kind of driving to have it released by then.
Very good. Very good. Well, make sure that Harry gets back in touch with your folks and get you back. So in the story of St. Patrick, of course, you mentioned that John Rhys Davies, who I would know as Gimli from Lord of the Rings,
yes.
You know, and so he plays the older Patrick. So does this start out when Patrick is a young boy or a young man?
Well, it does. The way this is structured is if you look at the letters that Patrick wrote, one of the letters is him giving a defense of his life and his work in Ireland. He had some detractors who were making a bit of a fuss over how he did what he did. And it's kind of classic, even though he was effective at what he did, you still had people who were second guessing his decisions and all that. And his letter was essentially a defense of his activities and why he did what he did. And rather than just have John Rhys Davies or have someone read a letter, I decided to actually create a fictional tribunal where the older St. Patrick is giving an account of his life. And then as he talks about his life, we go into this flashback to young Patrick and his life. So we've got both old and young Patrick represented in the story. Young Patrick is played by Sean O'Malley, who is from Dublin area. So he came in with we had a true Irishman playing young Patrick. And actually, John Rhys Davies is Welsh, which puts him very close there anyway. So I think we were covered on both fronts.
Very good. And as we're talking about this, just a reminder that this is put out by the Augustine Institute. And we've had Dr. Tim Gray and some other folks from the Augustine Institute on from time to time. Can be purchased online at Augustine Institute. Anywhere else, Paul?
If people are interested in what we're doing, we actually have a designated website called Air Theater, AIRTHEATRE, airtheater.org, and that has some links to places. You can get it through Audible. I believe it's available through iTunes and also through Amazon.
Very good. So I've purchased a couple of things through Audible myself, so then you can stream it instead of actually getting the CDs, and works well with smartphones and any of those other devices that are out there. And like I said, this is the time of year where people are going to be spending a lot of time in their cars, and just an awesome way to make the time pass on one of those long trips. Mm-hmm. So What I'd like to sometimes do with our guest, Paul, is you mentioned before this work you were involved with Focus in the Family. And sometimes people have these fabulous conversion stories, and some of them, it may not be this fabulous story, but how did you get involved in this work?
Well, I'll try to make it fabulous.
No, it can be. I mean, it's all fabulous. I mean, every conversion story is awesome, and we're called as Catholics to continuously
I could make up all sorts of things.
Yeah, right. You've written plenty of fiction, right? You can be one of the characters for that matter. But how did you come to get involved in this work?
Well, it's interesting because I grew up Baptist. I mean, my formative years were spent as a Baptist, and then there was a period of time where, because I made a major move from the city where I lived, I'm an East Coast boy. I grew up outside of Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And but I made, for various reasons, I made this move from there to California, and went into what I can only describe as sort of a spiritual no man's land, in the sense that my experience of church was not a very good one. Everything seemed just so commercialized in this Protestant realm that I was in. It was during a period of what many would call the seeker movement era, when churches were pretty much, the Protestant churches were doing all they could not to look like churches or sound like churches, because they wanted to bring more and more people in. And I actually became more and more disenfranchised, because I kept thinking that they were using all these gimmicks and commercial sensibilities, marketing sensibilities, to try to get people into church. And the only way I could think to call it is, it was like a spiritual 7-Eleven is what the churches began to fill. And that's terribly condescending, and I have to be careful even saying that, because it's not true for all churches.
Sure.
But that triggered enough of a restlessness in me, I think, that I was open to exploring what I would have hoped to be a more transcendent church experience, something that reflected the church that I thought, one that had been around for 2,000 years and didn't necessarily need all the latest gimmicks in order to lure people in. And another move actually set me up for that, and I wound up living in England. My wife is English, and we had decided to move there. And while living there, I got involved in the Church of England, which is the Anglican Church. Mm-hmm. And then another move brought me to Colorado Springs, again with Focus on the Family. And again, I'm with the Episcopal Church, and this was what would be called a high church Episcopal Church, which meant that they were actually teaching a lot of Catholic things, but not actually admitting that they were Catholic. And maybe people didn't even know they were Catholic. So I wound up there for a number of years. And then, as most people know, the Episcopal Church in America began to implode, and over a variety of issues. And in those issues, I kept asking the question, and it was a key question then, as they were changing foundational doctrines that had been with the church for 2,000 years, I began to ask this key question, which is, so who has the authority to interpret scripture and establish doctrine? Because I just can't believe it's a free-for-all the way it seems to be among the many Protestant churches and even within the Episcopal Church. So that question sent me on a journey to explore the ancient church. And I wasn't thinking Catholic or anything like that. In fact, the idea of becoming Catholic was very foreign to me. And yet that question drove me back to the New Testament, to the book of Acts, to the early writings of the church. And I realized how ignorant I was of church history, number one. Richard Foster, a Protestant pastor, said that the thing about most Christians and Protestants in particular is that their knowledge of history is sort of limited to the first century, what they think is the first century, this blip called the Reformation, and then Billy Graham, and that's it. And as I went back in history to study what the ancient church believed and why it believed it, I was in that territory that I think Blessed John Henry Newman called solid Catholic territory. Once you go into the years ahead of the Reformation, it's all Catholic. And then it just became a matter of time, not if I became Catholic, but when. And then I did. I was received into the church almost 10 years ago.
Very good. Well, we're glad to have you, and we're certainly appreciate the work that you have done and that you'll continue to do. And, you know, the show before this one's called Saints and Sinners, and we talk about the saints in the liturgical calendar each week. And we try to bring them alive for our listeners, but it doesn't in any way compare to the work you're doing initially with St. Francis and now with St. Patrick. So we you know, we praise and thank God for your yes to answer that call to conversion and all the work that you're doing now for our Catholic brothers and sisters. And you never know who else is going to be touched by our work. I think a lot of times it's God's way of keeping us humble. He allows us to do things, and sometimes we hear about its impact, and oftentimes we don't. And I can I can just imagine the impact that that these will have. One of the things that's included in the works that Paul McCusker, our guest today, does, included with these audio dramas, is a discussion guide. And I had even brought it up to I'm a secular Franciscan, and we were just talking at our monthly meeting last week about what the professed group's going to do. We've been kind of doing some faith sharing on Scripture, and I remembered that I had listened to this audio drama. So we're actually, as a group, going to listen to for the next 10 months. We'll listen to one part of the St. Francis series. But the discussion guide that comes along would make it ideal for a group setting as well, wouldn't you think?
Well, I think so. One of the reason we created it was, well, multiple reasons, but one was that if someone wanted to use it in a group setting, like you're talking about doing, that there are some good questions in there to help guide people into the themes and the ideas that appear in the drama. And we also thought that it would be valuable for families at home, that if parents are driving with their kids to and from school or to soccer games or whatever, or they're on vacation, like you were talking about, or wherever they're going, that if they had a discussion guide, it would help tease out the themes and the ideas that are there between parents and their kids, or just between adults or whomever. Because one of the things that we try when I'm doing these stories, I'm not overtly trying to proselytize. I'm not trying to constantly persuade people overtly to the faith, because I feel like and believe that the saints' lives speak for themselves.
Amen.
And so when we tell a story like St. Francis or St. Patrick, what they do and what they say proclaims a lot more than if I tried to contrive various dialogues to sort of point people to the church directly. And it worked to the degree that one of the guys that worked on the post-production, who did the sound design for Francis, he was a staunch Protestant, but he listened to the St. Francis drama, and it set him on the path to want to explore what was going on with Francis. And then he worked on Patrick. And by the time he was done with Patrick, he was ready to join the church. In fact, he did. He was received into the church this past Easter. So the discussion guides and all these things that are kind of woven into these stories, I think, nudge people certainly towards the faith. And the discussion guide then helps bring that to light in whatever setting people want to use them.
And you may have mentioned it, but how did your relationship with the Augustine Institute come about?
Well, that was a big part of it. After I became Catholic, I was received into the church. I continued to work at Focus on the Family, which was fine, and I continued to do Adventures in Odyssey and the radio theater programs there. But I was always looking for that. I was trying to figure out how could I take what I had learned in the Protestant realm and use it in the Catholic realm. But when it came to story, when it came to fiction and the kinds of things that I've been doing most of my career, I really couldn't find much by way of an outlet, because unless your name is Michael O'Brien, it seemed like nobody was publishing fiction, and nobody seemed to be doing audio drama. But Dr. Tim Gray is a visionary. I mean, he's a man who who looks beyond where we are right now, and he's looking ahead to what will impact the church in the best possible way. And he and I met several years ago and got into conversations about storytelling and the power of story and art and beauty and truth. And then it was just a matter of timing when I was in a position where I was ready to make a change and he was ready for me to come on board to explore how we could do what it is that we kept talking about doing, which is create high quality dramas. They were already doing high quality video series. Anybody who's seen Cimbalon or Beloved or any of the others know that the Augustine Institute is known for its high quality. So that brought us together and 2.5 years ago. So I left Focus on the Family. And in fact, my last week at Focus on the Family was, I was in California recording Adventures in Odyssey. And then the next Monday, I was at the office in Denver starting my work with the Augustine Institute.
Very good. Very good. And I know when I was talking to my fellow Franciscans about the Brother Francis, the Barefoot Saint of Assisi, that I was able to go out to YouTube and get a short video, or actually the short audio. There is no video. To send a couple of people a link, and, you know, and to let them know this is what it's going to sound like if we do it. Mm-hmm. Is the same available
for?
I'm sorry.
We did do a couple of short videos just to promote both Francis and Patrick, which should be on YouTube and in the usual places. And I think they are posted on the AIRtheater.org website, where you see interviews with the actors and interviews with various people about what we're doing, with some short clips from the dramas. But yeah, if you're ever looking for that, it should be there.
Very good. We're at the bottom of the hour. Can you hang with us for a couple more minutes, Paul?
Yeah, happy to. Thanks.
Okay. We're just going to take a short break. I'm going to give out the numbers. If you have a question or a comment for Paul, the number's here, 610-527-2906. That's 610-527-2906. Or if you're listening from a distance, maybe over the internet at inhissign.com, give us a ring, 888-343-2484. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We are blessed to have had this Catholic radio apostolate for almost 40 years now. Thanks be to God for your partnership. Without you, this radio voice would be silenced. We have a monthly Mass offered for you, our loyal family of listeners. It's our way of saying thank you for underpinning our apostolate with your many prayers and financial support. This is your radio ministry, to be a voice for those who have no voice, to evangelize and to catechize for a time such as this. We know the Lord will bless you abundantly. He can never be outdone in generosity. If this ministry has touched your heart, help us to touch other hearts by supporting us with your prayers and financial support. Call us at 610-527-2906. Or visit our website at inhissign.com.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. Again, this is your host, Ken Johnston, for about the next 28 minutes or so. And it's my pleasure to have you with us. And it's really my privilege for me to be able to be here with you. I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners and all that support that you continue to give us here at In His Sign Network, and that support that's allowed us to be on the air now for over 40 years, the longest continuous Catholic radio show in the country. And we hope that you'll continue that support so we can do this for maybe another 40 years. And we're joined today. My guest has been Mr. Paul McCusker. He's involved with the Augustan Institute and producing now audio dramas. We've been talking about the Trials of St. Patrick, and another one that I was familiar with was the Brother Francis, the Barefoot Saint of Assisi, both published by the Augustan Institute. And during the break, Paul, I did run out and look at airtheater.org, and sure enough, there are some nice video clips out there. So I'd encourage our listeners to go out and pay a visit and check these out. Really, really, really well done. And as we've mentioned in the first half of the show, we spend an awful lot of time in the cars these days, and rather than getting all worked up listening to political radio or listening to the music that doesn't make any sense half the time, this is a great opportunity to learn about two great saints in St. Francis of Assisi and St. Patrick. And Paul had mentioned his upcoming work on St. Cecilia due out in time for her feast day in November, one that I'll be looking forward to now. So we didn't get any calls, Paul. I don't know if you have any other words of wisdom for us before we let you go.
Well, I just want to say how much I appreciate your apostolate that you've been at this for 40 years, and which means that you were actually starting at a time when you were ahead of the curve. Coming out of the evangelical Protestant background, the fascinating because generally they tend to be 5 to 7 years behind whatever is happening in the mainstream secular realm. And it was fascinating to me when I started working with Focus on the Family as a freelancer in 86 and then on staff in 88. That whole period was kind of the growth of evangelical radio. And I wasn't even aware that any Catholic radio existed. And not that I would have been looking then, but then when I became Catholic, I was very curious what was out there. And a lot of them are new. And the fact that you've been doing what you've been doing for 40 years there and the way you're ministering to people, I think it's fantastic. And I commend your listeners for supporting you and doing that. And I'm grateful to you guys that you're hanging in there and continue to broadcast.
Yeah. No, and I think like anybody that's been involved with the Catholic Church for the last 40 years, and we've seen our ups and downs, of course, and, some months, having to put out a plea to our listeners for a little extra support because the money in the coffers was down. But I think really, as you're probably well aware, that when we attempt to do God's will, that somehow or other, things always seem to work out. And that doesn't mean that we can rest on our laurels and leave it all up to Him. But we need to cooperate with Him. But He's taken care of us for the last 40 years. And as long as He'll continue to take care of us, we'll continue to do what we're doing. And I think that's what's why all these different apostolates and ministries are so important. There is no one ministry that takes care of all the needs. And I think there at the Augustan Institute and the work that you're doing, I'm involved in another organization called the Calix Society, which is for Catholics that are in 12-step programs, alcoholics and drug addicts and what have you. And earlier this year, we did the first symbol in series, of course, with Dr. Edward Shree, which was fabulous. And we just had somebody from outside. Actually, it was one of the secular Franciscans in the other organization I belonged to that learned that we had done it. And he just donated the second symbol in series to our Calix unit there. So we're looking forward to doing that. But all the idea of putting these videos together and providing them to at the parish level, for those that are involved in really active parishes that seek these out and sign up for forum.org and what have you and provide up to their parishioners, but also makes it available and not real expensive to us individuals who seem to be seeking this kind of stuff out. And in a world that's can be pretty dark at times, it's this is just wonderful stuff to get your hands on. And Like you mentioned, the saints speak for themselves. And when we read the lives of the saints, and I have a spiritual director that's just awesome. And, you know, he talks about how we really live in the ideal time, 2,000 years after Christ. And, it would have been cool to walk the streets of Nazareth with him. But some 2,000 years later, to be able to have not the established Catholic Church, or not just the established Catholic Church, but all these saints to lean on and to learn about them and see that, a lot of them weren't a whole lot different than us. I tend to look at guys like Augustine and those that were rabble rousers, even St. Francis. These guys, they weren't exactly born saints. And they, like you and I, have gone through these conversions and, we're drawn to God and we try to, do what God asks us to do. And,
one of the things I love is the phrase that I heard, and it might be the name of a book, but it's every saint has a past, every sinner has a future. Yeah. And that to me is the redemption story. When we talk about the saints and when we talk about their lives, one of the things that struck me was how many of them were on the very raw edge of life. Mm. It's not like they were comfortable, and even when they were comfortable, as in the case of, Francis, for example, who was son of a wealthy merchant, he ultimately rejected that. He ultimately realized how much that sort of thing might be damaging his soul, and he yearned for something bigger and greater than what the world had to offer him. And yet, the courage that it took for him to do it was the same courage that we face whenever God calls us to something, whether we're Francis or Patrick or whether it's Ken or Paul or whoever it may be. We are men of our times, and we are in our times and called by God to do what we do in our times. And the strength, the grace, whatever it takes to do that, which comes from God himself, is really our willingness to do it and to step up and say, yes, I will do it, whatever it may cost me, whatever it takes. And so the saints were not that much different from us because they had the same choices and the same challenges as we do. And the thing that helped make them saints were the yes that they said to God.
Very good. And I hope that the Lord blesses you and continues to bless you in your work, and so that we can continue to learn about not just the three saints that you've already completed and are currently working on, but to be able to bring us more in the future.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Paul, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us. I hope that our listeners will go out and check out airtheater.org and AugustineInstitute.org and consider picking up a copy of your own of The Trials of St. Patrick. And like we've been saying, take it on vacation with you. Our local listeners here in Philadelphia, when you're driving back and forth to Ocean City and Avalon, just a great way to spend the two-hour ride listening to these audio dramas, which are truly exceptional. I can speak from experience when it comes to St. Francis, and I'll be listening to St. Patrick in the coming days. So, Paul, thanks for being with us, and we appreciate it.
So much.
And we'll be back in touch when St. Cecilia comes out, and we'll have you back.
Yeah, great. I look forward to that.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
All right, thanks. All
yep,
bye-bye.
Take care, and God bless.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. So, brothers and sisters, I really want to thank you for being with me. And I know, a couple of times now in the last few weeks, for whatever reason, the Spirit's prompted me to ask these folks that we have on about what their story is. And, I talk about it often here about the need for us to tell our stories and how important those stories are. And here's Paul McCusker. Convert via starts out as a Baptist and then Episcopalian, evangelical, and eventually will come into the Catholic faith. And it was the saints that brought him along, and it was hearing those stories that brought him along. And to hear Paul's story, not unlike my own and many of the people that I get to work with these days and come into contact with, and to see how God has worked in their lives. And I know because I've met quite a few of you now, whether it's been the Wake Up America dinners or the 40th anniversary celebration that we had in May. And I know that God has worked in your life. Some of you call in from time to time on the different shows here at In His Sign and tell your stories and talk about, what brought about your conversion. And, Kathleen will tell her story often of the conversion that that she went through. And we really don't know the lives that we touch. And, and now here's Paul, somebody that's come into the Catholic Church and only in the last couple of years. And, with our Protestant brothers and sisters, they, don't put a whole lot of emphasis on the saints. We walk into our Catholic churches, and if you look around, someplace even like our cathedral where you walk in and you have all these side altars with various saints that are in those alcoves, or you go into any of our local parishes and the statues that might be there because of the devotions that those that came before us may have had and contributed to that parish, that these saints they're not folks that we worship. They're folks that the church holds up for us to imitate. And many of them, we mentioned St. Francis of Assisi and St. Augustine, and earlier today in our show, St. Norbert. And these were people that were, born into well-to-do circumstances, whether they knew emperors or their fathers were wealthy merchants or what have you. And deep within them, they knew that there was something more to life. Augustine knew it for a long time. He would, eventually, mostly, I guess, through the pleading of his mother, pleading with God for the conversion of her son and her husband. But Augustine was not a dumb man. He was very wise and studied well, but knew deep inside him that there was more to life than what he was experiencing. And I think the same was true of St. Francis of Assisi and all the saints, that deep within them is this this yearning, this burning for God. And it's God himself that puts it there. I often talk about, the hole in our soul that God creates us with, that we're incomplete. And it's in that incompleteness that God wants to fill for us. I think it's certainly intentional that that he has created us that way, that if he had made us perfect without that hole, with everything that we needed, that it would be a whole lot easier than it already is to turn our back on him. And for those that eventually wake up and realize that that hole is there and realize that really, truly, the only person that's going to fill that hole is God. And to come to that realization is just really profound, because now our whole attitude towards life changes. We no longer chase things. We no longer chase money. We no longer chase the things of these worlds, because sooner or later we come to realize that it's all fleeting, that the joy that comes from chasing those things, from those things that we become addicted to, that while it may bring temporary joy, and especially when we first start to do it or accumulate whatever it is we're out to accumulate, that the initial joy is can be awesome, and then that's the problem, that it can be that awesome, that the high from the first time you do drugs, from the buzz from the first time that you drink alcohol, from the recognition you get from that first beautiful dress that somebody makes a big deal out of, that for the rest of our lives, sometimes people will go to their graves chasing that initial joy, that initial high, that initial recognition that we get. And it's never, ever the same. It's never the same. And yet we chase it and chase it and chase it, sometimes to the point of death. And I've watched it in so many of our brothers and sisters. I mentioned during our last show that over 65,000 people in the United States last year lost their lives to overdoses from drug addiction, and that's just drug overdoses. That doesn't include all those that died from the impact of alcohol in their lives, whether it be through cirrhosis of the liver or hepatitis C or any of these other things that get contracted as a result of the abuse of alcohol. But anyway, you know, these things come into our lives at some point, and they bring us joy. And it's in that, in chasing that joy, sometimes, like I say, for the rest of our lives, that it just brings so much pain and agony, and not just to the person that's involved in it, but to all those that are around them. To sit there and watch people harm themselves, sometimes all the time, it's awful. And often I can speak from experience, the person that's in the middle of it, the person that's wreaking all the havoc, thinks that they're only doing it to themselves. And it's really, you know, the family members and the loved ones, the friends that are impacted even more, especially, you know, when somebody loses their life, especially so many of our young people. And Father McKay and I get to hear about it on a regular basis. And, you know, the beauty of In His Sign and people like Paul McCusker that we just had on is the, you know, there are these voices in the midst of it all that just want to help. We just want to be a part of this mystical body of Christ that reaches out to anyone and everyone that that's willing to listen and to help and to make them aware that it may seem like nobody on this planet may love you, but there's a God out there that has all the love, and His love is perfect. You know, I listened to Father McKay last night talking about you know, God the Father, if He had the baby Jesus in one hand and you in the other hand, that He loves you equally, and for some of us that's hard to comprehend. For many of us, we don't think that we're all that lovable, that the things we've done makes us less lovable, that the attitudes and you know, these sins that we've committed, you know, cuts us off from God, and it's the furthest thing from the truth, you know. And you know, we talked about Matt Talbot in the previous hour. Matt would always say, "If I can do it, you can do it," and I'm living proof of that. If I can do it, if I, Ken Johnston, can sit here and be a part of your life through the radio, to be able to sit here on a weekly basis and talk about all that God has done in my life, if God could do that for me and bring me from where I was 25 years ago, He can do it for anybody. But we need to let Him. He doesn't force Himself on us. He may send a lot of people our way and put them in our lives, and they may be beating us over the head and trying to set us right, and we fend them off for as long as we can. But sooner or later, hopefully, you know, God can make His way through and open that door just a crack. That's all God needs, is just a crack. It He'll swing that door wide open, and His Holy Spirit will rush in, and He can do amazing things when we let Him, and it's in that cooperation. God's not going to do it all. He asks for our cooperation, and when we give our yes, just like Mary gave her yes at the Incarnation, and just like all the saints that we read about, if you read their stories, somewhere in there you'll hear their yes, and God is asking you for your yes. And what is God calling you to do? And it doesn't have to be great things. I've said it before, not everybody can do what I'm doing right now. Not everybody can do what Father McKay does, and not everybody can do what Kathleen McCarthy does and what Paul McCusker does, and all these folks that are out there and can be considered public images. Not all of us can do that. Some of us are called to do other things, and they're no less important. You know, being a mother or a father, being a step parent, being a brother or a sister, being a great friend is probably one of the most awesome vocations that you can do. How many times have I leaned on my friends when I was down and out? And I don't think anybody's ever considered, you know, being a friend as being a vocation. But so important these days. And I worry about our young people who are so tied into electronic devices, you know, texting and Instagram and Facebook and those types of things. And when the time comes and you're really down and out and you need a friend, as the James Taylor and Carole King song would go, when you really need that friend, are you going to have somebody to really lean on? And I thank God for the friends that he's put in my life and continues to put in my life, because, you know, those true friends are the ones that are there when we need them. And I think about a conversation my wife had many years ago with my oldest daughter. And, you know, my daughter was going through a time in her life where she had a pretty good circle of friends, and it was starting to dwindle a little bit. And I remember my wife telling her that if you have one or two really good friends, you're lucky that there's a lot of people that won't have that. And she did. All through high school, she had a couple of really, really close friends that she could depend on. And I have a couple of close friends. And I think it's important that when we have those people in our lives, that we be good friends as well. And, you know, I think we have no better example of that friend than Jesus Christ and the friendship that he wants to have with us. And that while we may have been brought up in some kind of God-fearing way, and my fear of God today is not that he's going to do awful things to me. My fear of God today is that healthy fear, that fear I have of disappointing him, just like I don't want to disappoint my earthly mother and father. I don't want to disappoint my earthly wife and what have you. But, you know, that's the fear I have, that I'll disappoint. But to come to know that Jesus really wants to be your friend, that he wants to be your help and your aid, and that he sends us an advocate in his Holy Spirit, whose feast we celebrated on Sunday during the Feast of Pentecost. And I just want to wrap up on that note, because my brother-in-law in Ohio, those of you that are regular listeners would know that at the end of March and beginning of April, my wife lost both of her parents over the span of 5 days. Her mother had been sick for a while and passed first on a Friday, and the following Tuesday, you know, she came and got my father-in-law and took him to heaven with her. And today I get an email from my brother-in-law, and actually, the email was sent to my father-in-law. I'm not sure that they actually knew how to contact him. But anyway, my in-laws were originally from St. John of the Cross here in Roslyn. And they had moved to Chicago, Illinois, when he was transferred through his job. And there would become part of St. Petronella Parish. And I even forwarded the email to Kathleen earlier today, because in that letter, it was from a person who my in-laws had deeply affected, and it was all through a Life in the Spirit seminar, something that, believe it or not, Kathleen hasn't roped me into yet, and something that I know is on the horizon at some point, not something I've gone through yet, but Kathleen and my in-laws were all involved in the Charismatic Renewal back in the 70s in at St. John of the Cross, and then my in-laws would carry that with them and really bring it to their parish outside of Chicago, Illinois. And anyway, the letters talked about a Life in the Spirit seminar that my mother and father-in-law put together in 1988. And this woman was writing to let the children know the impact that had on their lives. And again, I use that as an example, because, you know, we do, some of us try to do a lot of things in this world, and we try to do a lot of the right things. And sometimes we don't know the impact that we're going to do. And I'm convinced now that that's God's way of keeping us humble, that if we knew the good that came of some of the things that we'd done, it'd be real easy to get proud-hearted and pound our chest and, you know, look what I did. But it's God's way of keeping us humble, and we don't know the impact. And so as part of this mystical body of Christ that all of us are, everybody that's listening, Catholic or not, in God's graces or not, that we're all part of that mystical body. And when any one person is suffering, when any one person is struggling with the faith, if there's any one person that's away from the church, we are all impacted. And I'd ask you this week, like I said, we're coming off the Feast of Pentecost, and this Sunday we'll celebrate the Feast of the Holy Trinity, that if you're away from the church, that God is calling you back, and he's calling you back not just for your own sake, but for my sake and for all of our listeners' sakes, for all those that whose lives can be impacted by the gifts that you have and the work that God may be calling you to do. And like our guest today, Paul had no idea that this was going to be the work he was going to be doing as he made his way through the various Protestant churches, eventually to become Catholic. I had no idea 25 years ago when I started back to church that this was what God would have me doing. What does God have in store for you? Do you have any idea? Have you thought about it? Have you, in your prayer, asked God, you know, what is it that you want me to do, Lord? What area of my life do I need to be stretched? Do I need to step out in confidence? And whatever it is, whatever God has prepared for you, the grace is going to come before you're going to do it. He doesn't ask us to do anything that we can't do, and he doesn't ask us to do anything that he won't give us the grace to do. I feel blessed to be a part of In His Sign, along with some awesome people that are here, and Frank and Harry and Maureen, and of course Kathleen, who saw in me things that I didn't see in myself, and you know, the other broadcasters that are here, and Brian Gale and Ann McGlone, and the folks that take your prayer requests on Friday, and John Madrigal and Ann Costa, and all those here that give of themselves. And I think if you asked any of them when they were kids or when they were teens or even in their early 20s, if they thought that this was what they were going to be doing when they were adults, probably would have said no way. And yet here we all are. So I'm asking you, I'm begging you, that in the next day or two, ask God what it is that he wants you to do, and then ask him for the grace to do it. I want to thank you for being with us for these 2 hours today. Hopefully you were with us the whole time. If not, we'll take whatever time we can get from you. And until we meet again next Wednesday, I just pray that God will hold you in the palm of his hand. And until then, take care and God bless.